Today is Monday, July 12th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Haiti police arrest suspected mastermind of president's killing.
Authorities accuse Christian Emmanuel Kanon of hiring mercenaries to oust Moïse and plotting to then install himself as president.
Plus, partisan divide drives U.S. COVID vaccine hesitancy.
A little less than half of Republicans surveyed recently said they are vaccinated or will be vaccinated, compared to 93% of Democrats.
Also, UN accuses Russia of rights abuses in occupied Crimea. Our top story today is in Haiti. Haitian police have arrested one of the suspected masterminds in the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. The suspect is a Haitian man who authorities accuse of hiring mercenaries to oust and replace Moïse. Eve Johnson of Reuters reports.
Haitian police on Sunday arrested someone they suspect was a mastermind behind the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse last week. Authorities accuse Christian Emmanuel Sanon of hiring mercenaries to oust Moïse and plotting to then install himself as president.
Sanon arrived in Haiti on a private plane with political objectives, according to our information. He had contacted a company specializing in security to recruit some bandits and arrived in Haiti at the beginning of June, accompanied by some of them. They were initially supposed to guarantee his security.
Police say what was once a mission to protect Sanon later changed to replacing the president. Following the killing at Moïse's home last Wednesday, police arrested a group of Colombians and two Haitian Americans. The authorities said it was a commando unit, armed and trained. According to the Miami Herald, the Colombian suspects said their mission was to arrest Moïse, not kill him. Police later confirmed Sanon had given one of the suspects an arrest warrant for the president, although the details of the alleged plot are still unclear, along with Sanon's motives. There could, however, be an American connection. The Miami Herald also reported that some of the Colombians claim to have been hired by a Miami-based security firm. And public records show a man with the same name as Sanon had worked as a doctor in Florida, although no confirmation yet on whether it is the same man. The assassination has plunged poverty-stricken Haiti into chaos. The government has appealed to the international community for help. On Sunday, the Pentagon said experts from the FBI and Department of Homeland Security would be traveling to the country to help with the investigation.
That's Eve Johnson of Reuters. A power struggle is brewing in Haiti as the man appointed prime minister shortly before the assassination of Haiti's president this week said he, not the acting premier, should lead the Caribbean nation and was forming a government to do so. Brian Wood of Reuters reports.
A power struggle is brewing in Haiti in the wake of President Jovenel Moïse's assassination. Ariel Henry, who Moïse named prime minister just 2 days before his death, declared himself the nation's highest authority over the weekend. But he hadn't been sworn in by the time Moïse was killed, creating confusion over who should be the legitimate leader. Henry, a neurosurgeon by trade, told Reuters over the phone late Friday, quote, "After the president's assassination, I became the highest legal and regular authority because there was a decree nominating me." Claude Joseph, who Henry was meant to replace, was named interim prime minister in April and has so far taken the reins of power in response to Moïse's assassination. He's appealed to the U.S. for support and declared a 15-day state of emergency. Haiti's elections minister said Joseph would keep that role until elections are held in late September. Henry, however, said he would create a new electoral council, which would determine new dates for elections. Haiti's 1987 constitution states the head of the Supreme Court should take over as interim president, but the highest court's leader died last month, further complicating the political crisis. Haiti's Senate, which currently comprises just a third of its usual 30 senators, nominated its head, Joseph Lambert, on Friday to be interim president, according to documents reviewed by Reuters. There is also no sitting parliament to resolve the issue, as elections were postponed amid political unrest in 2019.
That's Brian Wood of Reuters. Shops were looted, a section of the main highway was closed, and protesters marched through the streets of Johannesburg on Sunday, following the jailing of former South African President Jacob Zuma spread to the country's main economic hub.
Police report at least 6 people have died in the protests, and the government has called out the army to calm the situation in Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal provinces. Emily Wither of Reuters reports.
Shops were looted and protesters took to the streets in South Africa's main economic hub on Sunday as sporadic acts of violence spread to Johannesburg. Demonstrators expressed their anger following the jailing of a former South African president, Jacob Zuma, on Wednesday. The unrest had mainly been concentrated in Zuma's home province, where he started serving a 15-month sentence for contempt of court. Zuma's sentencing and subsequent imprisonment have been seen as a test of the post-apartheid nation's ability to enforce the law fairly, even against powerful politicians. But his incarceration has angered Zuma's supporters and exposed rifts within the African National Congress. Zuma was given the jail term for defying an order from the Constitutional Court to give evidence at an inquiry that is investigating high-level corruption during his time in office. Police said criminals were taking advantage of the anger to steal and cause damage. Authorities warned that those inciting violence could face criminal charges. Zuma has challenged his sentence in the Constitutional Court. That challenge will be heard on Monday.
That's Emily Wither of Reuters. Vaccine hesitancy in the U.S. is proving hard to crack, with roughly one-third of Americans not vaccinated against COVID-19, the disease that causes the coronavirus. The partisan divide over the vaccine continues to hamper efforts to defeat the virus. Michelle Quinn reports.
Areas in the U.S. with low COVID-19 vaccination rates are seeing a rise in hospitalizations, including in adults 18 to 49 years old, who now account for more than 40% of COVID-19-related hospitalizations, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. President Joe Biden said last week it is time to step up outreach to persuade people to get their shots.
We need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
Some Republican lawmakers said they were concerned that the federal government was planning to come to people's doors. The Biden administration clarified that the president, a Democrat, didn't mean federal agents would be forcing people to be vaccinated. The administration said the federal government would provide more support to states through what it called surge response teams. The persistent partisan divide over the vaccine appears to be hampering vaccination efforts. A little less than half of Republicans surveyed recently by ABC and The Washington Post said they are vaccinated or will be vaccinated, compared to 93% of Democrats. Dr. Anthony Fauci, the White House chief medical advisor, says it's important to reach the unvaccinated through people they trust. He spoke to ABC this week.
We've got to get away from the divisiveness that has really been a problem right from the very beginning with this outbreak.
COVID-19 hospitalizations have been rising in recent weeks in Arkansas, a state that tends to vote Republican. Just 32% of Arkansans are fully vaccinated, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center. Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson, a Republican, says vaccine skepticism is tied to conservative beliefs about government. He spoke to ABC this week.
And we just have to answer it just like we have all through history, that you overcome skepticism and mistrust by truth. You overcome resistance and obstinance with saying that it's important for our community and it's important for the health of our state and nation.
Looking ahead, the CDC said schools should be fully opened in the fall for in-person learning. But whether students and staff who are fully vaccinated will be required to wear masks may again be a partisan issue. Republican governors of Arkansas and Texas are saying no to students masking, and officials in California, a Democrat-leaning state, are saying yes, because social distancing isn't always possible. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
A report by the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres accuses Russia of failing to abide by its obligations as the occupying power in Crimea in violation of international human rights and humanitarian law. The UN chief submitted his interim report recently to the UN Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Russia illegally seized and annexed the Crimean Peninsula from Ukraine in early 2014. This action, which has been widely condemned by the international community, triggered a conflict between Russian-backed separatists and the government in eastern Ukraine on April 6, 2014. Information in the Secretary General's report was gathered through remote monitoring because the UN was unable to enter Crimea to conduct a proper investigation. The report documents a wide range of human rights violations committed by Russian Federation security officials on the ground. The Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights, Nada Al-Nashif, presented the report to the UN Council. She says her office has received new allegations of torture and ill treatment committed by Russian law enforcement agents against people in their custody.
Detainees from Crimea complained about poor conditions of detention in penitentiary institutions in Crimea and in the Russian Federation, which could amount to ill treatment. Arbitrary placement in disciplinary cells, often in the form of solitary confinement, was used as a form of punishment for minor disciplinary offenses or as a method to coerce statements from detainees to incriminate third parties.
UN investigators have recorded the arbitrary arrests of 19 persons, including 11 Crimean Tatars, most on charges of terrorism and illegal possession of explosives. Al-Nashif says membership in certain religious groups, such as the Jehovah's Witnesses, are banned by the Russian Federation. She says the Orthodox Church of Ukraine has come under increasing pressure and is threatened with the loss of its two largest places of worship in Crimea. She says lawyers often get into trouble when defending such cases.
The office documented cases of deliberate hindrance and harassment of lawyers who actively defended the rights of their clients in high-profile cases investigated by the Federal Security Service of the Russian Federation in Crimea. Furthermore, courts continue to deliver guilty verdicts in high-profile proceedings during which fair trial guarantees were not fully respected.
Ukraine has submitted an updated resolution to the Council urging increased political and economic sanctions to encourage Russia to end its aggression and human rights violations. In response, Russia has accused Ukraine of neglecting human rights on its own territory, noting the situation of ethnic and linguistic communities in Ukraine was concerning. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is the Voice of America. The Biden administration has upheld a Trump-era rejection of nearly all significant Chinese maritime claims in the South China Sea. The administration also warned China that any attack on the Philippines and the Flashpoint region would draw a U.S. response under a mutual defense treaty. China's military said it chased a U.S. Navy ship out of a disputed area on Monday. The U.S. Navy said the USS Benfold was sailing in international waters. Three black players who missed penalty kicks for England in a decisive European Championship shootout against Italy were subjected to racist abuse online. The English Football Association issued a statement condemning the language used against the players. Bukayo Saka missed the penalty that gave the title to Italy and denied England its first international trophy since the 1966 World Cup. It was England's third straight failure from the penalty spot in the shootout, with Marcus Rashford and Jadon Sancho also missing. You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. The Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights is condemning pervasive arbitrary detention and torture by both government and Russia-backed separatists in the 7-year Ukraine conflict. The condemnation comes in a report submitted recently to the UN Human Rights Council. We have Lisa Schlein again from Geneva.
The analysis by the UN Human Rights Monitoring Mission in Ukraine finds around 4,000 of those detained have been subjected to torture or ill treatment in both government and rebel-controlled territories over the past 7 years. The analysis is based on over 1,300 conflict-related cases since the war in the breakaway eastern regions of Donetsk and Luhansk began in 2014. Deputy High Commissioner for Human Rights Nada Al-Nashif says the prevalence of the torture and ill treatment was highest at the initial stages of the conflict and has since decreased.
In government-controlled territory in the early stages of the conflict, cases of arbitrary detention included enforced disappearances, detentions without court warrants, and confinement in unofficial places of detention, often secret and incommunicado. In armed group-controlled territory, detention during the initial stages of the conflict lacked any semblance of legal process and often amounted to enforced disappearance.
The report says cases of arbitrary detention in government-controlled territory continues to this day, but have substantially decreased. On the other hand, Al-Nashif notes these practices persist to a high degree in the eastern separatist areas.
We are gravely concerned that egregious violations of torture and ill-treatment documented in the Izolitsiya facility in Donetsk, as well as in other places of detention in territory controlled by the self-proclaimed republics, continue on a daily basis and are carried out systematically. These violations must stop.
Al-Nashif is calling for independent monitors to be allowed access to places of detention and for perpetrators of human rights violations on both sides of the contact line to be held accountable. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
As the United Nations marked World Population Day on July 11th, its experts said there is no perfect population number and that human innovation will continue to manage and outpace the growth in the number of humans living on the planet. VOA's Laurel Bowman has more.
It took most of human history for the world's population to reach 1 billion people, but over the past 200 years, that number has increased sevenfold, according to the United Nations and other data. The world's population now stands at about 7.7 billion, and forecasters expect Earth will cross the 11 billion people mark around the turn of the next century.
Behind the numbers is an enormous success in global health, above all things. It's one of the great consequences of development, that as human health has improved and mortality has declined, there has been an enormous growth of the human population.
The UN Population Fund tracks demographic trends and works with governments around the world on planning. The agency's experts report a big need to manage urbanization, as more than half of the world's population now lives in and around cities. Other experts have called for transnational migration plans. Large numbers of people may also be playing a role in climate change, but this issue is complex, according to the United Nations.
Very, very small amount of contribution to emissions are coming out of the developing world. So to focus on the numbers of fertility and family planning and growth in developing countries and to suggest that that is a cause of climate change is one of the great, let's say, detours to acknowledging that the responsibility lies in the global north on patterns of consumption.
And what about that international COVID-19 baby bust we've all been hearing about? The downward trend in births will pass, say experts, and they argue that access to health care for women will, over time, help regulate population growth.
When people are able to have the number of children that they want, what we see is that, in general, over time, people have fewer children. In part because the investments in children have risen. So the affordability of children, the cost of children, has increased with the cost of education, for example.
Meantime, many top demographers say there is no perfect population number and that human innovation will continue to outpace population growth. Laurel Bowman, VOA News, Washington.
India's big cities are facing a growing housing crisis amid a swelling population as the country is set to overtake China by 2027 to become the most populous country in the world, a United Nations report projects. Emma McCarthy of Reuters reports.
India is on track to overtake China as the world's most populated country by 2027, according to the United Nations. And it's facing a housing crisis. home to 1.3 billion people, India has been witnessing an influx of people migrating from villages to cities in search of better job and education prospects. However, affordable housing remains an unresolved problem, which has led to a mushrooming of illegal settlements and slums. 24-year-old Priya moved to Delhi from Rajasthan for work.
Because of, you know, job purposes from villages, people have to shift to cities, and I mean, of course, cities are now very populated. So, you know, if we make our villages more developed, more educated, I think this difference will not be there.
Informal housing is often unauthorized, with poor sanitation facilities, unplanned drainage and an erratic supply of clean drinking water and electricity. Upinder Kumar lives near a settlement in Delhi. He says in the next 20 years, people will turn into cannibals, given the lack of jobs and homes. The Indian government launched the Housing for All mission in 2015 with a 2022 deadline. It aims to build 20 million urban housing units and 30 million rural homes. India's most populous state, Uttar Pradesh, recently proposed legislation aiming to promote a two-child policy. Under the state government proposals unveiled on Saturday, couples with more than two children would not be allowed to receive government benefits or subsidies and would be barred from applying for state government jobs.
That's Emma McCarthy of Reuters. Pope Francis made his first public appearance Sunday since major intestinal surgery last week, but the Vatican says he will remain in the hospital a few more days. AP correspondent Judy Walker reports.
From a hospital balcony, the Pope greeted well-wishers as he stood for 10 minutes, smiling, waving, and offering thanks for the prayers for his recovery.
In questi giorni di ricovero in ospedale,
calling health care for all a precious good. He also prayed for the people of Haiti following the assassination of their president. The Vatican says the 84-year-old is on the road to recovery following July 4th surgery to remove a portion of his colon, which had narrowed due to inflammation. But it hasn't said when he'll be discharged from the hospital. I'm Julie Walker.
A federal judge is considering whether to order financial penalties and other sanctions against some of former President Donald Trump's lawyers. They had signed onto a lawsuit last year challenging Michigan's elections results. The lawsuit alleging fraud was voluntarily dropped after a judge found nothing but, quote, speculation and conjecture, unquote, that votes for Trump somewhere were destroyed. Michigan Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the city of Detroit, and other officials now want the plaintiffs and their lawyers to face the consequences of pursuing what they call frivolous claims. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Rockford Yabaro, and our managing editor, Kate Pound Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here. Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.